Hi, hello, hello. It's time once again for Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated exclusively to Ring of Honor. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I'm joined this week, as always, by my co-host, Emily Fear.
Hi, Harley. Hi, everyone.
It's friggin' hot today.
Yes.
We're recording this at like 10:13 at night. We're in different countries, nowhere close to each other, but Mother Sun has set her sights on both of our neighborhoods, and it's a hot one, like 7 inches from the midday sun.
It's a special kind of torment to be like 10:15 at night and like it'd be just as hot as it was when you woke up, just as hot as it was in the morning and in the afternoon. Just no difference, no nighttime comfort, just still hot, humid, gross.
Yes, that's the title of this week's show, Hot, Humid, Gross. Actually, that's the name of the next ROH event.
Yeah.
they're running it opposite SummerSlam.
Yeah, so if they came back to Western Pennsylvania and did a taping here, that's what they could call it. State of the Hot, Humid, and Gross.
Yes. Hey, speaking of ROH events, there are two this weekend that happened. But before we get into that, breaking news. I literally found this out maybe 20 minutes before the show, so thank you, ROHWrestling.com. We discussed a week or two ago that ROH's very first event ever, the Era of Honor Begins from February 2002, was now available on Honor Club. We watched it, or I watched it at the time, and gave a little bit of my thoughts about it. And the sequel, ROH's second event ever, which was entitled Round Robin Challenge, is now available on Honor Club. March 2002, you've got Christopher Daniels versus Loki. You've got Christopher Daniels versus Bryan Danielson. You've got Bryan Danielson versus Loki, all in the same night, plus some other matches. Pretty exciting. I'm glad that I get to keep watching the inaugural events from 2002 and seeing Christopher Daniels when he was, let's be honest, exactly the same as he is now. The man is a vampire, apparently.
Yes, he's playing up a slightly more generic fascist angle to his presentation recently, but still the same wrestler.
Yes, and so now that's gives some credence to SoCal Uncensored. Christopher Daniels has been wrestling 25 years doing this. He's been around. So when he says that somewhere like San Antonio or Dallas is the worst town he's ever been in, you know he means it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's he's seen everywhere. He's been everywhere. He clearly, like, he knows how he's got a whole ranking system. Although at some point, like, somewhere has got to be the worst place.
They're all equally tied for worst behind Southern California.
Understood.
Actually, little side note, unrelated at all, but one of my favorite Bobby the Brain Heenan quotes from commentary was Hulk Hogan was making his entrance, and Heenan said, "You know what? This is my second favorite song." And I want to say it was Gorilla Monsoon said, "What's your first?" And Heenan said, "Every other song is tied for first."
That's a hell of a way to rank your music choices.
Yes. So, yeah, Round Robin Challenge, ROH's second event, now available on Honor Club. I'll be giving that a little look-see sometime this week, I think, and maybe share some thoughts next week if anything jumps out, anything really cool that just try to sell. I feel like my goal here is to convince you people to go watch these events too. And I don't know why, because I'm not getting a commission from people signing up for Honor Club. ROH hasn't paid us to endorse this. I just think it's cool that we get to go back and watch these shows that I've never seen before.
Yeah, they're just neat. I think that if they get a lot of viewership, it'll encourage them to keep doing this, to keep releasing stuff. I mean, obviously that's the plan anyway, but it never hurts to like show that there actually is like attention being paid to these early specials. And honestly, I haven't watched, I'm still working my way slowly through the first special they posted, but you know, I'm just thrilled that they're releasing this stuff, and it's worth going back just to see the evolution of so much of this talent and evolution of the brand of ROH too. So I'm in the same boat. I'm not really sure why I'm so keen on people watching it. I just really want people to embrace it.
We just want people to enjoy quality wrestling. That's it. That's our mission statement on this show is, hey, wrestling is fun and watch it.
Yeah, quality wrestling and, you know, for the moment with these specials, poor production values, but that will change.
Yes, it was 2002. Do you remember 2002? We were the same age.
Yes.
Miss Fear. We would have been 17. And what's that? That's a grade 12, our last year of high school. Oh, no, not for me. We had the grade 13 year here in Ontario. But
grade 13? Okay, yes. You'll have to explain off podcast what that means.
It was a weird thing that they did for a while where you could take an extra year if you wanted and repeat certain courses or take additional courses, I guess, to bump up your grades, maybe?
Wow.
I don't know. Don't ask me to explain Canada. I've lived here my whole life, and I can't explain it either.
I see so many benefits to that. I honestly, you guys haven't really figured out. Like, that seems like a very smart idea. They don't do that anymore.
Oh, no. My year was the guinea pig year. We were the last ones. Everybody before us had to do it. Nobody after us was allowed to do it. My year, we were right in the middle, and we had the choice.
Oh.
Anyway, nobody's here to listen to the history of the Canadian educational system.
Are you sure about that?
One person is here to listen to the history of the Canadian educational system. Sorry, buddy. We got to focus back on the wrestling.
Email Talking Otter to tell us about your thoughts on Canadian education.
Yes, and the history of Louis Riel, traitor or hero? Next week, Talking Otter. Emily, this week, New Japan Pro Wrestling, your other love,
yes,
announced this year's G1 Climax and the list of participants. Tell our listeners, the handful who aren't too familiar with New Japan, what is a G1 Climax and who are some of the big names involved? Why is this relevant to ROH?
Okay, well, to answer the last question first, why it's relevant to ROH is that there is, as in the case with most New Japan Pro Wrestling major events, there is some overlap between talent that is shared between ROH and New Japan. So the G1 Climax is a annual tournament that New Japan Pro Wrestling sponsors. It runs from the middle of July usually to the middle of August. It's around like 4 weeks long. And this year's, it's a round robin tournament. So there are two blocks, A block and B block. This year are 20 competitors, 10 in each block, and they will face off in several, basically like 18, they'll face off in 18 different shows that will lead up to the final, the 19th show that will be on August 12th. So the reason why people might be paying attention to it, especially this year, is because as was the case the last 2 years, Kenny Omega will be in the G1 Climax. But also, first-time participant, Hangman Adam Page. This is a heavyweight competition, so you won't be seeing your junior weights. You won't be seeing, like, Marty Scurll in this competition. But Hangman Page is making his G1 Climax debut, and it's very exciting. So he's in A block. Kenny Omega is in B block. So the chances of them actually facing off are fairly minimal. But what we will be inevitably seeing is a face-off between Kenny Omega and his Golden Lovers partner, Kota Ibushi. Since they are both sharing spots in the B block, that means that at some point they will have a match. Kota has been a picked favorite to win this year's G1 Climax for a eventual title shot at Wrestle Kingdom, because the winner of the G1 Climax is given a title shot at Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome at the beginning of January. That's like the big prize. It's something they actually have to defend. Once or twice, I believe, in the fall leading up to that big event in January. But no one has ever lost that has lost their title shot. So at least not since they started doing this in 2012. The Climax itself is an evolution of a tournament that started back in 1974. It's been the G1 Climax since 1991. So it's been running for quite a while. And it's 4 weeks of incredible action. If you were following it all, the Best of Super Juniors, just imagine that, but maybe add on another 2 weeks to it, and you get all heavyweight matches. lots of great solo action, lots of matches that you never really get to see outside of the G1. So I really encourage people to check into that, look into that. It's been described as one of the most grueling wrestling tours that anyone can do, that any wrestler can handle. So it's definitely something to see. These matches tend to be just one after another, better than the last. So if you want to see some world-class wrestling, it's happening. It's coming up in the middle of July. So at the latest tour New Japan Pro Wrestling has been doing, Kizuna Road, they announced the competitors the first night, and the second night this morning, if you're in the West, they announced the blocks, and then tomorrow they'll announce the schedule. So by the time you hear this, there'll be a schedule and you can check out and see who and what to expect and when. And I encourage everyone to check out the Pro Wrestling Torch Lion Cast if you're a VIP member. I'm sure they'll be doing a whole preview leading up closer to that and probably running down the announcements so far in the latest show. So yeah, definitely make sure you check them out because they'll probably have a lot more to say.
It's kind of interesting. ROH has been around not since 1991 or, you know, since the 70s, but ROH has been a company for 16 years now. They don't have too many traditions like this. I don't think they don't really have the roster to do a huge tournament like this every year. But ROH doesn't really have too many traditions at all. They don't really have any kind of every year we do this sort of match or any every year we do this in order to qualify for a title shot at Best in the World or a title shot at Final Battle, in the same way that, you know, WWE has the Royal Rumble. You win that, you go to WrestleMania, G1 Climax, you go to Wrestle Kingdom. I'm surprised ROH doesn't have more traditions. The only thing that comes to mind immediately is the Top Prospect Tournament, and even that, it looks like we're not getting that this year after all.
Yeah, the only time I've heard anything about the Top Prospect Tournament this time around has just been like kind of used as a framing device for other actions, other things going on. Like it's just been kind of a red herring or a MacGuffin, honestly. So I'm not really sure why ROH doesn't have this type of thing. They do have annual events that they do on a regular. I mean, obviously you mentioned Final Battle, and they have a number of things that they repeat, but it does seem weird that they don't have like a tournament in this style. I was actually wondering about what they were going to end up doing about, you know, how they did the Women of Honor tournament as a lead up to, you know, the introduction of the Women of Honor title. And it makes me wonder if like they're going to be planning any kind of a annual tournament for Women of Honor. It is odd. Like they've been around long enough now where you would think that there'd be some kind of just even, you know, a week long tournament in place. It wouldn't have to be a big event that G1 Climax has become. But it does seem strange that they don't have like a mini version of it.
Yeah, an ROH version of the G1 Climax, because you were saying you get to see matchups that you might not normally see, and unlike say just here's a thrown together match for television or for a house show, there's stakes in every one of these matches. So it's not just here's two guys randomly facing each other, whatever. It's both guys are driven to win this particular match because there are consequences and there are rewards for winning it. So something like that, where we get to see matches that we normally never see, Shane Taylor against Vinnie Marseglia, or LSG versus Kenny King, or something like that. Like that, I'm on board for that. I always love a good tournament. I just think it gives so much more focus and direction to something. It gives you an end point, it gives you reasons that these things are happening, and some surprises along the way.
Yeah, I think it would be something valuable to add to their rotation, especially considering that they don't have the same. I mean, yes, they don't have the depth of roster that New Japan Pro Wrestling has, in the fact that New Japan Pro Wrestling has a dedicated junior heavyweight and heavyweight competitors. ROH doesn't really have that, so that frees them up to do a lot of really interesting dynamic matches within a tournament that just features all their major people. It does require them to have people like locked in for a certain amount of time. But again, it doesn't have to be a 4-week deal. It could be the length of what they do with Best of Super Juniors. Best of Super Juniors only uses 16 people. So like it's a shorter tournament overall. You get just such a great opportunity to showcase your talent. New Japan Pro Wrestling has really used the G1 as a way to bump up and raise the profile of their mid-card talent. So even dating back to the early 90s, when the G1 really just became the G1 Climax, that was a way for them to showcase the talent that had just come back from their, excursions and were just returning to New Japan. And the G1 Climax ended up being a way for them to make a big splash on their return. So ROH has a lot of talent that is still kind of, looking for focus, looking for that light, trying to make that break, trying to, raise their momentum. A tournament like this is a really great way to do that in a very short amount of time.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
And it gives focus. And yeah, I draw the comparison to the King of the Ring tournament as well. Back in the day, WWF did the King of the Ring tournament, and same idea. Somebody who was kind of a mid-card person moved into the main event, essentially, by winning this thing. There's no reason they couldn't do even a 16-man tournament like that. Look at the amount of guys on the roster right now who fit that criteria. Punishment, Silas, Kenny King, almost everybody in the tag division, and especially ROH has all these working relationships now. So you put in a couple guys from CMLL, a couple guys from New Japan, a few from RevPro over in the UK, and easily fill something like this. And it just would provide a little bit of structure and a little bit of these matches mean something. And they don't. You don't have to do it like you said. You don't have to do 2 weeks of shows every day where it's just these tournament matches. You could spread this out over a month or two and have, say, every week on television, there's one or two matches that are part of the tournament. And at the Honor Club events, there are three matches that are part of the tournament, but mixed in with other regular title matches and whatever. I just think, after watching these two state-of-the-art shows this weekend from Texas, I just think ROH should really, they need to do something to make this stuff more interesting, because I am a pretty big ROH fan. I mean, I host a podcast about it, and that says something. And I'm bored watching these shows most of the time.
Yeah, I feel that. There's a very strong risk of fatigue the more shows that you put out there, the more shows you make accessible. We're watching house shows, right? We're watching these state-of-the-art shows, and these are essentially house shows that we get to watch because we're Honor Club members. And we are fans, so we are genuinely interested and intrigued by some of the matchups that get announced and, what's on the card. And we follow these people, every week on the television show, and we watch the major pay-per-views, that it makes sense that our interest carries over to the house shows. But you're right. At a certain point, there's a lot of it, and it doesn't do that much different. There's not that much variation between the matches or between the dynamics in these shows. I honestly could not tell you, watching State of the Art Friday and Saturday, I don't know if I remember what matches happened what night, aside from maybe the one or two really notable things that happened. And that's a problem, because there's not a distinction. There's not something distinct about most of the things that happen in these shows. So something like folding in a form of tournament play that raises the stakes for the people involved, so that there's some point keeping at home. So it's someone rises in the standings of this tournament or falls back a little bit because of their performance at a particular house show. That does just enough to maybe make the interest level just a little bit more spicy.
Yeah, we had a fair amount of matches. I can't remember. I want to say there's 9 matches both nights, so 18 matches total. But really, what long-term consequences came out of these two nights? there's one obviously big long-term consequence, which we'll get to in a minute. But aside from that one, I mean, Tennille Dashwood picked up a couple more wins. Okay. Bully Ray, low blowed Flip Gordon again. Wow. You know, what else happened? Cody and Shane Taylor on night two, they had a really weird long promo segment where it looked like they were trying to get the fans to cheer for Shane Taylor against Cody. But then later on in the night, they have their actual match, and Shane Taylor's wrestling like a heel, and Cody's fighting from underneath like an underdog. And just, yeah, weird stuff. And I'm like, at the end of the day, I don't know if any of this means anything or has any long-term consequences. And if they just want it to be a house show, and that's it, and just treat it the same way that they've treated house shows in the past, the same way WWE or any other company would treat a house show, fine. Maybe I shouldn't be watching them then. Maybe I shouldn't be bothered reviewing them and reporting on them. Hey, they're there for the fans and attendance. But then why put them on? I don't know. I don't know what the point is of these shows, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Well, the point of them is to be live entertainment for a live paid audience. And the point of watching them from home is, honestly, I think it varies depending on your level of interest. There may not be much of a point to watch every single minute of these shows from an Honor Club perspective, from someone sitting at home watching it.
Saying I'm just a masochist?
Well, I'm saying you and I are obviously like marks in this way, in that like we bought into the degree that we are, you know, trying to watch everything that they're giving us. You know, we're the fans that are willing to go there. We're hosting a podcast about it. But it's possible that Honor Club is fairly new. Like, this access level is fairly new. And so I think that it's a very novel thing at this point, or it still has some novelty to it. But at some point, both you and I, if we are facing a level of fatigue where we're just not into everything we're watching from these house shows, I'm likely to start just like reading the results the next day, going back and watching the most notable matches, and that's it. I've already kind of started doing that on weekends where it's just been too busy for me to catch the entirety of a show. And as much as I don't want to miss anything that, you know, might be interesting to me, I'm going to take an opinion under a respected opinion that I can trust, and I'll just go back and I'll, you know, watch the one or two matches that are really worth watching, and then probably just pass on the rest. And that might just be the way to still enjoy this content without having to like suffer through all of the content.
Yeah, I guess the issue for me is I don't know which matches are going to be good and which matches are just kind of going to be like phoning it in. And I don't know when something crazy is going to happen, like a new television champion. I did not think Silas was going to drop the title. I thought maybe one of the guys in the six-man mayhem match would win to earn the shot against Silas immediately afterwards. And then that match, either Silas would win with hook in the tights, or there'd be a disqualification, something like that. But if you had asked me, hey, is Punishment Martinez going to win the title at a state-of-the-art show on a Saturday night, I'd say no way. Not going to happen. And yet here we are. So there's still surprises out there. I don't know. What do you make of all of that? Because that was unexpected.
It was. I never would have guessed. I honestly wouldn't have. It was the first time in a little while that ROH has done something really surprising. And it was nice because I admit, like, I'm a, like you heard earlier, I am a New Japan Pro Wrestling fan. And Gato, the booker there, always has a way of keeping us fans on our toes and, you know, being maddening at points about it. But it does have a way of keeping you surprised and like waiting for the next move that he's going to make. ROH doesn't necessarily always do that. Sometimes it does fall kind of formulaic. You can pretty much predict the results of a lot of things, especially in recent months with how weighted towards Bullet Club things have been. Like, if Bullet Club has anything to do with the match, you kind of know where it's going to go. So it was pleasing to see a genuine twist, something kind of a genuine, something that genuinely threw me for a loop. And to see it go to Martinez on the cusp of best in the world, the timing is just, it's all leading up to something that, if for once, I'm really excited to kind of see what they have up their sleeve with this. Because, I mean, obviously, one of the paths they could take is that, you know, that title changes hands again at Best in the World and goes to Hangman, which would be cool. Or Punishment goes on a run for it for the next couple of months. Like, I like this. I like that it happened at a house show. I like that that's something offering people like us an incentive to, you know, possibly tune in when they have these specials. I don't think that they do it enough to really say that that's something that's, you know, a surprise you're going to expect every time you tune in. But it's nice to have that once in a while. I'm just kind of shocked that they actually did it. I'm kind of surprised that they actually used one of these shows to make a major move.
Well, in hindsight, you just said, or you alluded to, the fact that Bullet Club wins a lot lately and dominates the show lately. So maybe we're, I mean, come on. It should have been obvious. Hangman Adam Page was the only member of Bullet Club not in a title match at Best in the World. And now he is. So how did we not see this coming? It makes perfect sense. Bullet Club is the only thing that matters in ROH. And now they all get title shots at this show. Cody, Marty, the Bucks, and Adam all challenging for the ROH titles. I'm surprised. Maybe once Brandy's going to be the one to take Sumi Sakai's title once she's healthy again.
Yeah, I mean, does it count if she's not officially a Bullet Club member? I mean, I know that she's taken to wearing the Bullet Queen t-shirt in various capacities, but yeah, that, I mean, I'm genuinely glad that they did something surprising on a show, on one of the state-of-the-art shows. I'm glad we got to see that. But you are right in that it's another little, like, machination as a way of pushing forward the Bullet Club and offering more titles towards these wrestlers who are part of it, like, which is just kind of irritating. I mean, yeah, it raises this. I do, isolated from that, I will say that it's a compelling thing to have a TV title match between Punishment Martinez and Hangman. Like, I think that that raises the stakes in a really interesting way, that, like, their rivalry, their, like, ongoing feuding, it's been fun to watch. But I think adding a title to the mix is a nice like elevation upon elevation, but folded into the larger thread of ROH just continually coming back to the Bullet Club. Well, it is starting to get kind of exhausting how weighted towards BC this show has become. And I feel like we're losing all of our other guys in favor of just playing out this Bullet Club story over and over again. No disrespect to those wrestlers. Like, obviously we really love them completely, but it's, you know, it's exposure to a degree that no one else in that company is getting. And it's just, I worry about watching Best in the World and just seeing a just nonstop tear of Bullet Club getting every title possible. I mean, obviously, I mean, unless Dalton is able to retain, a Bullet Club member will take the you know, world title, but otherwise, it would be nice to not to be a foregone conclusion, and it's starting to feel like one.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think I'm going to call it hashtag Bullet Club Fatigue. Because that's what it feels like. We love all these guys. We love Being the Elite. We host a Being the Elite podcast as well. We love the Bucks. Paige, future champion for sure. Cody, Marty, always a blast. Bernard, my next tattoo is your name, buddy, right over my heart. But yeah, it wasn't always like this. I remember there being other people in ROH. I remember there being other wrestlers on the roster. I don't know what happened to them. I think it was last week on the show, I was like, hey, whatever happened to Coast to Coast and Motor City Machine Guns and Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malonis? My questions are still out there. Chucky T returned this week, but other than that, you know, there are a lot of people that we don't see very often. And yeah, I mean, this week's main event, we'll talk about that for sure this week on television. Anything else from State of the Art, though, that jumped out to you? We saw the debut of Hurricane Helms. He was the Hurricane with the mask. He did the Horror Choke Slam, everything. Basically just comedy matches, though. I mean, he was partnered with Delirious, so that he should have, we kind of knew going in they were going to be comedy matches. But him and Delirious got a pinfall over the Addiction. Does that mean anything? Am I wrong about thinking this was his only in-ring appearances and he's going to transition into being the on-air authority figure instead? Maybe is he going to stick around and actually wrestle full-time?
You've got it planted so deep in my head now that that's the case that, like, it hadn't even occurred to me I've gotten to the point now where it didn't occur to me that that wouldn't be the case. But seeing him wrestle, kind of seeing how he was utilized in these two shows, I'm curious if that's going to develop any more than that. Is he scheduled to appear again?
His next appearance, his only appearance right now that's officially mentioned, is the next set of TV tapings the day after Best in the World.
Okay.
So I don't know if he's announced to wrestle there or not, but my thinking was that's when he comes out maskless as Shane Helms, and he's confirmed to be the new enforcer, and he starts by putting Bully Ray in his place, and then maybe Punishment Martinez as well. Or not Punishment, Shane Taylor, sorry. Shane Taylor's the one causing problems.
Yes, apparently. Yeah, you mentioned it before, but that odd promo between Cody and Shane and Brandy and that building towards something of a, you know, seeming like Shane was almost going to be the face in that match, but that's not how it shook out. Honestly, that promo to me just stood out for the one, like, kind of funny moment to me that when Brandy was, you know, talking for Cody at some point, Shane saying that, like, they definitely couldn't be from Texas because they don't let their women argue for them. And so one of the crowd started a "Yes, we do" chant, which was kind of great.
Yes, I love any, you and I both love any subversion of gender stereotypes.
Yeah, appreciated that, especially, you know, from Texas.
Yeah.
But yeah, very odd dynamic there. Very odd. I'm not really sure. I just did not expect a Shane Cody promo in that way, and threw me for a loop. And then
kind of a long one.
It
went back and forth for a while there, and it started to be like, okay, where is this going? And then the match, you'd think the match would happen right then and there, but no, they went backstage and they waited an hour.
Yeah.
It was odd.
Very weird.
Only other thing I have from State of the Art, and it was a totally offhand thing, but we've discussed this before, and it ties in. I'm going to try to tie it in to everything we've been talking about already on the first half hour of the show about the Honor Club events being a little dull, and maybe they should do something. Maybe they could do something to change things, spice things up. During, I want to say, Thunder Rosa and Tennille Dashwood on night two, Sumi Sakai was a guest on commentary, and they asked about her facing either of these women, and Sumi Sakai, being the terrific babyface champion that she is, said she'll put up her title against anybody. And Colt Cabana, being the comedian that he is, said, even me? And she said yes. And Ian Riccaboni quickly, the voice of ROH, said, I don't know if the board of directors would go for that. So, 2 points to this. One, if he's saying, I don't think the board of directors would want to see Colt Cabana challenge for the Women of Honor title, that's a fair point. We'll see that, right, Em?
Yes. Although, I did have an insane scenario in mind that they stays the Women of Honor title, and it's only ever held by women wrestlers except for Colt Cabana. So, like, men can challenge for it, but the only man who's ever been able to get it is Colt Cabana. I think that that would be, if that carried on for long enough, I'm talking like a couple of years, I think that that would be really, really funny. And maybe the best joke that Colt Cabana had ever made as like a comedy wrestler.
He's the only male wrestler on the roster who's woman enough to hang with the women.
Yes. The only male wrestler on the roster who would successfully get the Women of Honor title. And so that would mean that you would occasionally have to have other men try, but they would fail. The only man to succeed would be Colt Cabana.
And they could certainly... Okay, so the second point of this, we don't want to read too much into Ian's statement because we don't know necessarily what it means. It might just be an offhand way to get the for him to get the conversation back onto the actual match that's happening in the ring at the time. But Colt Cabana challenging for the Women of Honor title, a little awkward, a little weird. Tennille Dashwood challenging for the television title, why not? Why? You know, especially in a company like ROH, WWE, in the concept of intergender wrestling in WWE, a little bit trickier, perhaps, because WWE is the land of the giants. How do you put and all their women are thin model type women. So how do you book a 140-pound woman against a 380-pound man? I can see how that argument is like, oh, that's not believable. But in ROH especially, I have no doubt, that Tennille Dashwood could hang in a singles match with Kazarian, or Kelly Klein could easily eviscerate Cheeseburger, bell to bell. And I just, my thing is, I feel like ROH, especially lately, sometimes feels too much like WWE. And I think that wrestling in general is such a dynamic art form with so many vast possibilities and things that could be done with this art form that we don't do. For the most part, an ROH wrestling show, especially a weekly television show, is not really any different from a wrestling show from the 50s or the 60s. You have your matches, which obviously you have to. It's the bread and butter of the thing. It's like you have a sitcom, you have to have jokes. Okay. But then beyond that, all ROH really does, it feels like, is matches between two people who either respect each other or hate each other, but are more or less equals, and then the odd promo and interview. And that's it. And I don't know. There's so much more room for variety, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too elaborate in, like, some of the ways that WWE is, where there's, like, skits and things like that, like extended scenes and things that take the promo to a more like sketch-like content. It's one of the reasons why I prefer ROH is that it's a little leaner in that way. But I do think that there's ground to break here that they are reluctant to break, and maybe that's their media parent. Maybe that's the people who pull the strings over there and their reluctance to break the mold. But my take on intergender wrestling, so let me just lay this out there, because people often, you know, just come back to the same arguments against it, and I get what those arguments are. My take on it is I don't like to think of it as males fighting women, women fighting men. Like, I like to think of it as a mix of weight classes. As you said, like, obviously in other feds, in like the Fed, where the guys are really big and the women are fairly, like, you know, they're muscular, but they're, you know, slender and smaller framed and, you know, much more like kind of in that traditional, like feminine strength mode. That dynamic, that difference, that variation is very, very wide. But in ROH, like you said, there are some comparable body types that will work in an intergender matchup. Also, it's not unusual in other feds to see, in tag matches, a junior heavyweight partner with a heavyweight partner to go up against another tag team that's comprised of a similar combo. in that way, an intergender tag team match makes a lot of sense, and you could get a lot of mileage out of that for your stars if you were willing to venture into that. I know that this is all off. This conversation is based all on an offhand comment and kind of just like a jokey thing, but it's really something that ROH should consider sincerely. Not the, you know, having Colt Cabana attempt to win the Women of Honor title, but they really should strongly consider playing with that dynamic a little bit more. Back when they did Honor Uniting, the third night, I think it was, with the little weirdness with Tennille being in the ring and some of the like physicality there, I was genuinely interested in Tennille for the first time since I was told to be interested in her. And I think it's because she was being put in a situation that wasn't just what we have come to expect to see from her. A lot of tag matches, a couple of solo outings that have been just okay, like doing her typical stuff. It was neat to see her interact with wrestlers that she wasn't regularly interacting with in a way that she doesn't normally interact with the women wrestlers. And it was fun. It was fun. It was a little bit more exciting. It was a little different. It was something unexpected. ROH has the chance to do that in a way that, like, seems to become still eluding WWE, despite the fact that there's like the perfect opportunity in NXT just waiting for them and they're not willing to take it. ROH should seize this before they're faced with a similar opportunity that they're just glossing over and missing and wasting talent.
The guys on the NXT podcast that I do, the Wednesday night podcast, PWT Talks NXT, told me that I bring up Lucha Underground a lot, which is funny because honestly, I'm only now watching the show, and I'm on like episode 10 of season 1, while season 4 just premiered last week. So I'm far behind, and there's a lot I haven't seen of Lucha Underground. But I think if there's a reason I bring it up fairly often, it's because it sticks in my head in certain ways, because a lot of it is so not what I'm used to seeing in WWE or NXT or ROH or even New Japan Pro Wrestling, in the sense that they have intergender wrestling regularly. They have little people. They have a drag queen who wrestles for them. It's Mexico, so obviously they've got masked wrestlers as well. But I mean, even ROH, we had the CMLL guys come in, the masked luchadors, but nobody in ROH has a mask or has a sort of... A lot of the guys in ROH have interchangeable gear. The black trunks and black boots, that's 80% of the roster, I'd say. So I'm not saying that ROH should incorporate all of this. I don't think that, you know, having a drag queen on the roster is the solution to making me more interested in their house show events. I don't think midget wrestling is going to be the savior of turning ROH around and making it really captivating and different. But I think trying new things and doing some different stuff and experimenting with stuff, I don't think there's ever really a downside to that. And I think it just trying any sort of new thing would be really cool. And who knows what's going to take off and what isn't. And my argument in favor of this, my closing argument in this essay, is if you had told most ROH fans 1 year ago that Bullet Club was going to add a guy in a bear costume to their group, people would have said, that is the dumbest thing ever. That is terrible. Bullet Club have jumped the shark. This is going to be so stupid. And now here we are, and Bernard gets pops when he comes out on TV, and people love to see him take a bump. And this week on television, he got misted by Bushi in the face, and the fans went nuts. And Hiromu Takahashi and Daryl, another good example, where on paper, this might sound like, well, this isn't wrestling, this is the dumbest thing ever, but people love it. So why wouldn't we love intergender wrestling or something different?
Yes, I totally agree. And I think that the point of just like trying it and seeing what the reaction is and seeing how people take it is important, because there's a lot of things that you can throw into that ring and you can see what sticks and what doesn't. Obviously, there's an ROH mode. Obviously, there's like certain aesthetics. There's certain, all the, you know, established feds have their way of doing things that kind of fits within their brand. And I'm not expecting ROH to like break their brand so much as to expand the notion of what that brand can encompass. And you're right. Like, their premium stable, their like golden boys right now, are regularly accompanied by a guy in like a half bear, half businessman costume. Their title, their world title holder right now is Dalton Castle, who breaks the mold in so many ways for professional wrestling, even in contemporary professional wrestling. And yeah, they haven't been like super kind to Dalton in attentions, and it's been a kind of a rough title reign for him because of injuries and because of their continued infatuation with Bullet Club. But the fact remains is that they put the belt on Dalton Castle, and they were willing to do that. And there's probably a lot of promotions would still shy away from like making a guy like that their champion, a guy with that particular like, you know, eccentric character and like and flamboyant presentation. But
in his first promo as champion, he had his two, for lack of a better term, slave boys form human furniture in the ring for him to sit on.
Yes. He is regularly accompanied in his big shows by not two boys, but like tens of boys. I mean, he has cultivated a whole following that, and he's popular. He's very over. Like, he has his detractors like a lot of over wrestlers do. Like any champion wrestler is going to have people saying that his reign isn't great, that his title reign hasn't been awesome, but he's got a ton of fans. And a guy like, and then a promotion like ROH, 10 years ago, that wouldn't have been the story, but it is now because ROH is part of the expanded universe of wrestling. Though it's been a culture of wrestling, they need to embrace that and push it a little bit further because they can. Why not? They have nothing to lose. They really don't. If it doesn't work, it's wrestling. If it doesn't work, they wash their hands of it and pretend like it never happened, because that's wrestling.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too, and if so, check out our sister site MMAtorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMAtorch.com.
And it's funny that all these like out-of-the-box examples that we cite, Dalton Castle and the boys, Bernard the Business Bear, I'll lump Cheeseburger into this category, all massively popular with the fans. None of these are like things where the fans are like, oh my god, they're doing this stupid thing again. It's like, yeah, it's the boys, it's Bernard, it's Barry, it's, I mean, the only one I guess that kind of hasn't gotten over as really popular would be maybe Vinny Marseglia and his balloons. But he's a heel, so maybe, you know, maybe the fact that it hasn't gotten over is the point.
I mean, he's also not a very good or interesting wrestler to watch. And Dalton is helped by the fact that he's a great wrestler to watch. I mean, he's got a great gimmick, and his gimmick is very like him, but he's also a great wrestler. But I'll say this, like, you make a great point again. Fans like this. Fans like Bernard. Fans like Dalton. Fans like this stuff. You know what?
Fans love Daryl the cat.
Fans love Daryl. Those who say online that people don't like Daryl are existing in a completely different planet, a very sad, dour, awful planet that I don't want to go anywhere near. But you know what fans don't seem to love, at least not a lot of the fans that I have conversed with and talked to and, you know, witnessed posting multiple tirades online? Bully Ray continually making his appearances and punching people in the junk. They aren't huge fans of that, and ROH has not just bought into it, but has doubled down. They were totally fine with writing that out, despite its lukewarm reception at the very beginning of his heel turn, and it's only gotten more tiresome, and people have only gotten more alienated by it. So, I mean, if that's not working and they're still buying in, why not try something that you don't know if it's going to work and see if it works? They're taking risks in the wrong direction.
And let's talk about this week's television, because here's another example to me of ROH's weird kind of booking or their weird philosophy to here's how we're going to present our wrestling television shows. Best in the World is, as of the time that you are listening to this, assuming you're listening to this on the Wednesday when it gets posted, or the Tuesday when it gets posted, Best in the World is 10 days away. week and a half. And this week's television had almost nothing to do with that pay-per-view. First pay-per-view in 2 months, and very little on this show had anything to do with that pay-per-view. We had two matches featuring four wrestlers not even booked on the card. Then we had a main event, and again, weird main event. Crowd-pleasing. People love Bullet Club. People love LIJ. Weird that it wasn't announced in advance in any way. This episode of TV opened with Bullet Club addressing Los Ingobernables. You're going to have no excuses when we beat you tonight, blah, blah, blah. And I have to imagine I wasn't alone going, what do you mean beat them tonight? What's happening tonight? I mean, it wasn't announced last week. They didn't make any mention of this. They just, all of a sudden, here's a 10-man tag. We saw this exact same match with these 10 participants in the main event of War of the Worlds back on August 18th last year in London. So less than a year ago, we saw this same match. And they tried to tie it in the best in the world. You know, Cody and Marty were there, and Marty accidentally hit Cody with the umbrella. Dalton was in commentary talking about them. Martinez came out, and him and Paige balled up the ramp. But I don't... For me, that was all just repeats. I've seen Cody and Marty accidentally hit each other a bunch of times now. I've seen Paige and Martinez brawl up the ramp a bunch of times now. I've seen Dalton Castle sitting somewhere off on the sidelines while Bullet Club got center stage many times now. And so I just don't know what the point of this match was, and I don't think this match or this episode of television did anything to really further the stories on Best in the World.
Yeah, it really didn't. And I'm not entirely sure why not, because they did a pretty decent job of, you know, building the storyline towards Best in the World in the last three episodes. So I believe this is the fourth and final, like, Chicago taped episode. And for me, I was kind of, it felt like it was taped on an entirely different day. Like, it felt like completely the tone had shifted, the attention had shifted. It felt very much like more of a kitchen sink collection of things rather than a full, like, a actually envisioned episode, especially given the fact that it wasn't pointed in any kind of attention wise towards Best in the World. There were callbacks. Yeah. There were great, like, little moments throughout this match that were just, you know, fun to watch, but it was funny to me because I was watching it and, you know, they kept making, there were references to All In, and I realized that these episodes must have been filmed on the day that the tickets had gone on sale. And what had happened with that, which, you know, they went on sale, they sold out in 30 minutes, et cetera. I believe this was the same day. And so it was weird to me because it got referenced, at least All In kept getting referenced in this episode in ways that it didn't get referenced in the episodes prior, despite the fact that they'd all been filmed on the same day. Now, they might have done that intentionally to, like, give the sense of time moving forward. But for that to get any kind of attention and not Best in the World, it was odd. Yeah, this was a strange episode.
How is All In getting promoted more on ROH television than the actual ROH pay-per-view? Especially when the ROH pay-per-view is in a week and a half, whereas All In is in a couple of months, and the ROH pay-per-view has seven matches announced that need promoting and need building, whereas All In has literally one match announced.
Yeah, I mean, you do get some Best in the World stuff outside of the main event match. I mean, you get a whole Briscoe's promo about, you know, facing the Young Bucks, the Best in the World, for the title match. Obviously, Dalton is there to talk about, you know, Dalton's on commentary and can talk a little bit about, you know, facing Marty and Cody at Best in the World. But yeah, it felt weirdly sidelined in favor of this event that's not actually a specifically, like, ROH event. Down to the fact that there was a promo at the very beginning of the episode where BC is calling out LIJ and saying that, can they sell 10,000 tickets? Like, just very odd to me that there's a major event that is being kind of pushed in this episode that is not Best in the World.
And I've just been underwhelmed in general lately by ROH's storytelling. It feels like for every feud, they have one idea and then they just repeat it over and over. So like I said, how many times now have we seen Paige and Punishment just brawling up the ramp or around ringside? How many times have we seen Bully hit a low blow on Flip Gordon, or Cody and Marty accidentally hit each other in a match when they didn't mean to, they meant to hit somebody else? Even like you said, we got the Briscoe's promo was at least very like focused on Best in the World, focused on their opponents at Best in the World, but it didn't add anything new to the story. It didn't tell me anything I didn't already know. Essentially, the whole promo was, Young Bucks, you're the best at making YouTube videos and selling T-shirts, but we're the best at wrestling. That's as basic of a wrestling promo as you can get. This is a pay-per-view. This isn't an Honor Club event that we're building to. This is something that they're asking people who aren't on Honor Club to go to Fight TV or wherever and pay, I'm guessing, at least $30. And I just, all of these feuds and stories on the card feel two-dimensional at best. Sometimes, as in the case of The Kingdom versus Bushi, Evil, and Sonata for the six-man titles, non-existent. The Kingdom weren't mentioned even once tonight when their three opponents who are challenging them for their championships were in the main event of the show.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what like next week is going to look like. What if it's going to be just nonstop promos for Best in the World? Because, you know, then it'll be, you know, a week out before the big pay-per-view. This episode very much felt like burying that for the moment. And it's unfortunate because, as, you know, repetitious as some of these things are, like, I did find the LIJ Bullet Club main event fairly enjoyable to watch. But there were a lot of really great, really great spots. I thought we got a lot of especially funny stuff. And I mean, any match that's going to include Bernard getting missed by Bushi is going to be, you know, it automatically gets bumped up half star in my book. But it did have a lack of, there was lack of purpose to it that I think always kind of hurts a match that's a main event. Obviously it's at the end of the War of the Worlds tour. So this was just, you know, these guys were there. This was the good main event that they could bring in. I'm sure it was a blast to watch in person. As the main event in the television episode, it didn't do much to carry on the story beyond what we already understood. And, it didn't achieve anything beyond just being kind of that entertainment that we wanted to watch. I felt like I had, and even for entertainment purposes, I felt like I had more fun watching the opening match from this episode than I did watching the main event.
All right, so let's talk about the opening match then, because I think hashtag Bullet Club fatigue, I'm done for this week. Let's move on to some of these other forgotten soldiers on the ROH roster. And Chucky T, speaking of forgotten, he got a win over Jay Lethal on an Honor Club event. I think it was a triple threat or a fatal four, but he pinned Jay Lethal, one of the top guys in the company.
Yeah, so it was a three-way match between him, Jay White, and Jay Lethal.
Yes, correct. And Chucky T got this shocking pin on Jay Lethal. And have we seen him since?
No, I don't believe so. I think this is the first time we've seen him since. Although that was on the same tour as this.
So. No, sorry. My turn to be the information booklet. He lost to Josh Woods on television a week later.
Oh, he did? Oh! Yes.
Or maybe it was at an Honor Club event, but he lost to Josh Woods, and then we hadn't seen him or Josh Woods since then. They both returned tonight just to lose again. Yeah, I mean, okay, Chucky T, he was introduced as representing Best Friends.
Yeah.
We haven't seen Best Friends in a while. I know Beretta's had an injury, so that's that.
Yeah.
But this match felt kind of, again, like here's a match, kind of, and not much more to it. And that's how it was positioned, at least. The commentators talked a little bit about Kenny King sending a message to Austin Aries.
I felt like that was a little heavy-handed on the commentary, just trying to make something out of not something. Like, I won't say this is a great match, but I did enjoy its energy. I felt like it was very well paced. I thought that the length of the match was like kind of perfect for what it was, which was kind of a mix of look, if you're going to do a comedy match, my preference is that the comedy match is like offset by like decent wrestling. And I think that Chuck E. T. and Kenny King are both like very, very competent wrestlers, very good wrestlers. And so there was quite a bit of comedy moments in this, but I didn't feel like they detracted from the wrestling. I felt like they were really nice accents to it. And I did enjoy and like genuinely laugh out loud to some of the moments that happened in this match, which is exactly what you want with the comedy matches. You want to be able to enjoy the wrestling and the comedic moments in equal measure. And I think that this really did that. I feel like with ROH standards these days, it's a standout type of match in that it's not anything notable as far as like doing anything plot movement wise. It doesn't achieve anything as far as the storyline goes, but it's an enjoyable match that didn't feel it didn't feel unnecessary in a time wasting way, if you get what I mean.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Yeah, as far as television matches go, it was a good one, and I enjoyed it too. I enjoyed the match. I thought it was a good length and all that. It's just, again, this I'm hung up on the storytelling. That's everybody has their things or their preferences about what they love the most about professional wrestling, because it's a complicated medium. For me, it's the storytelling. I love the characters. I love the stories even more than an amazing flip or some like crazy chain wrestling. I'm invested in the characters and the stories, and that's where I've been struggling with ROH as of lately. It's things like, well, why did Chuck E. T. pin Jay Lethal in that match? And then if they weren't going to do anything with him, if they were just going to have him lose to Josh Woods and then disappear for weeks or a month and then come back and lose to Kenny King, why did he pin Lethal there? Why didn't Lethal pick up the win on him in that match? And Kenny, the commentator is talking about Kenny King and sending a message to Austin Aries. And my notes say, okay, is that still on? Is he still? Because I don't think we've heard from Kenny since Aries turned on him. You think if they're feuding or if there's going to be a match between them at some point, King would have had some mic time by now to address what happened, to address his good friend low blowing him and betraying him and all that. Instead of just the next time we see Kenny, he comes out and he goofs off with Chuck E. T. and takes photos with fans and acts like he's the same old Kenny King. And I don't know, if we do see King and Aries at Best in the World, like we thought we might, I hate pay-per-view matches being announced a week out from the show. I think that's insulting. I think that diminishes the match. It makes it feel like, oh, this match doesn't matter. We waited until 9 days before the event, and then we just posted about it on Twitter. And that's how we made the big announcement. It makes it feel like, well, that's like, who cares? It's basically a pre-show match.
Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily agree all the way there, but I will say again that this did not feel like a message sending match to me. This very much felt like its own, just like kind of, you know, admittedly throwaway, but enjoyable throwaway match that was not like, was not Kenny's vehicle to serve some kind of message to Austin Aries as a challenge. Especially when you consider all the kind of comedic spots that were thrown in there, like how strong a message are you sending to your potential opponent by, like, you know, showcasing yourself in ring, trying to hug your opponent in ring? Like, that's not a I'm going to get you type moment. So I don't really buy the whole sending a message to Austin Aries. And I will say I'm frustrated with the lack of how many matches at Best in the World do we know now? We know the Bullet Club ones. We know Jay Lethal versus Kushida. But there is a number of, like, just kind of random spots that have not been filled in. There's plot threads that are dangling that could have spots at Best in the World and haven't so far. That's kind of getting – I think you're right to be frustrated by the lack of – the lack of completion here. We are, you know, less than 2 weeks away from it at this point. We could really use a complete card to have a complete understanding of where the storyline is headed, you know, into Best in the World and potentially afterwards. And we're not getting that right now because there's still so many holes in just holes in the card, holes in the stories, holes just all over the place.
I think I've raised this maybe last week too, but whatever happened to Coleman's pulpit? I think were you a fan of Coleman's pulpit?
Yeah, I would say so. I haven't really missed it, but I feel like maybe it served a purpose that isn't getting served now for the lack of it.
Yeah, like I'm talking about furthering these feuds, you know, Coleman's pulpit with Kenny King, letting King talk about Austin Aries, letting Coleman Caprice kind of be the spokesperson for Austin because he's not there. Seems like a great way to further that feud. Or some of these other, I mean, do you want to dive into the Best in the World card right now, what we know so far?
Sure. Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, so we know Dalton, Cody, and Marty Scurll for the world title.
Mm-hmm.
And the story of that match essentially is Cody and Marty both want the title, and they've accidentally hit each other a couple of times.
Yeah, they're bad.
And Dalton's banged up and hurt. He shouldn't even be wrestling anymore, but he is wrestling. So that seems to foreshadow title change for sure, one way or another.
Yes. And I think one of the major issues going into this three-way match is that Dalton is being played up basically as – it's being played up as inevitably he's going to lose the belt. And it's sad that the question is who's going to get it, Cody or Marty, and not who's going to get it, Dalton, Cody, or Marty. Like that – that to me is like, and there's nothing in ROH storytelling right now. There's nothing in the mentality of ROH booking right now that doesn't have all signs pointing to one of these Bullet Club members having this title at the end of Best in the World. It's just a matter of who. But it's just a shame that this is not like a genuine three-way, that there isn't like a genuine chance for Dalton to retain.
Match number two. Briscoes versus the Young Bucks for the tag titles. This is probably one of the better built matches on the card because we saw them face a couple weeks ago. Briscoes took the cheap disqualification way out. They faced each other many times in the history of ROH. Last time they faced, Ian Riccaboni brought up their track record. He actually said, hey, they're 5-7 in these matches against each other, respectfully. So, you know, there's... But again, I feel like we're invested in the characters and not so much in the feud between them. Like, they both want the titles. They both want to prove they're the best tag team. That's about it, though.
Yeah, we got a little bit in the Dallas night of State of the Art with the Young Bucks, you know, sneaking up on the Briscoes and attacking them and, you know, doing a little bit to kind of try and push that feud back into, like, you know, not just as a reference to all their past, but to reference stuff, you know, in the more immediate situation. So I think that they're trying. I think it's the same storyline that we've had between these two tag teams for a long time. It hasn't gone much away from just the fact that, like, just what you said, you know, one of them is the best. It's just a matter of who has that title.
Match number three, somewhat unofficial. Punishment Martinez versus Adam Page for the television title. That was the question mark coming out of the State of the Art events. I'd have to imagine. We already had Punishment and Page booked. You'd have to assume the TV title is going to be on the line now that Punishment's the champion.
Oh, absolutely, but yeah.
If they make that announcement, it's going to be an announcement online because I doubt we'll even hear Punishment acknowledged as champion next week on television. Next week's TV was probably taped a month and a half ago or something like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think where next week's TV was actually taped, because if we just hit the end of the Chicago tapings, I forget where they've done tapings since.
New York City, was it?
Yeah, there was New York. I think there was New York. So, yeah. So there's definitely going to be more TV episodes that don't factor in the TV title change.
Yes. And this is another one. Like, this is a feud that's been going on for a while. They've been attacking each other and beating each other up. But even then, here's another good example. It all started when they were booked for an Honor Club match, somewhat randomly, and the match didn't happen because Punishment attacked Adam from behind and chokeslammed him through a table. And since then, they've brawled, they've fought each other. Sometimes Paige gets the better of it, sometimes Punishment gets the better of it. But, Emily, can you tell me why these two are feuding? Why did Punishment chokeslam Adam Page through the table that first time?
Because Punishment needed something to do. Because he had his title shot, it didn't work out, and he needed something to do. And Page honestly kind of needed something to do too outside of Bullet, like outside of the guys in Bullet Club, because Page is like, he's a great wrestler and he's a great addition to Bullet Club, inside the stable, both in New Japan Pro Wrestling and in ROH, but he didn't really have his own storyline, especially after Supercard of Honor. He got his match against Ibushi, and then, you know, he needed something else. He needed an actual feud of his own and not just like, you know, picking up part of Cody's feud. So there's not an actual real reason. They needed something to do, and these two guys who have styles that work really well together and can actually probably pull off a really fantastic match. They're good fits for rivals. They weren't given a very like compelling reason to start rivaling other than just Punishment deciding to, you know, take out whatever, goth angst he's feeling on Adam Page, whatever night that was for Bound by Honor. So I think that it's going to be interesting if it becomes a title match. And this had just kind of occurred to me too, but you know, with the whole back and forth and them attacking each other before or after matches and stuff, the night of the tour, I think it was War of the Worlds, where Paige was up to challenge Silas for the TV title, the match where he got attacked by Punishment beforehand and, you know, basically fought the TV title match, like, you know, partially concussed or something. It's going to be interesting to see if this is a TV title match against Martinez. And if Paige gets it, it's kind of a full circle thing where, through Martinez, Paige is able to get the title that he wasn't able to get partially because of Martinez's meddling.
Sure. I'll give it to you that there could be some nice symmetry there. Even if at the end of the day, that's all.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't mind something paying off in that way, but you're right. Like there isn't like, they don't have some like emotional backstory for this one. It really just comes down to moments of violence leading into more moments of violence.
Which is exactly the same as Flip Gordon versus Bully Ray.
Well, yeah, unless
Bully hates him because he's a young kid.
Yeah. I mean, there's a, you know,
and that's about it. He tried to make us think that it had something to do with Montana, but really it didn't. It had nothing to do with Montana. He just hates millennials.
Yeah.
And so he likes to hurt their genitals.
I mean, for the Bully Ray and Flip Gordon and Cheeseburger thing, at least there is the like added element of like there being some kind of generational issue. Because with Punishment and Hangman, it's literally just like I had to fight you and I didn't feel like it, so I choke slammed you through a table instead so I could just walk away. That's like the genesis of their feuding. Whereas, you know, if the Bully Ray storyline had been pulled off in any better capacity, there might be an interesting story to tell about someone who is, you know, semi-retired, is put into like an authority role, and is resentful of those like young and like, you know, at the beginning of their career. There's a lot you could get out of that. It has not been played for the nuances that it is capable, that it is like, you know, that it's possible of delivering. It has been delivered basically as just like one angry old man ranting and occasionally punching guys in the junk and occasionally whipping Cheeseburger with a chain and like really cheap jerk moves that don't actually maximize the storytelling potential of what it could mean to have someone who is, you know, much older, like being resentful of guys who are just at the like very beginning of their career.
And that's basically my criticism of all of these stories that are happening is you have a kernel of something there, and it could be something really interesting and really well told and really complicated. It just isn't. they, for whatever reason, they don't want to take it to the next level. And it's not, it wouldn't require hours and hours of television. It would require a promo here or there, a couple of lines, comments here and there to elaborate on these things and explain why they're happening. And not every match needs a huge story. You know, Jay Lethal versus Kushida. Lethal wants to be the champion again. He's decided his path to get there is to beat people who beat him in the recent past. Kushida beat him 14 months ago at a show. So Lethal wants to face Kushida again to beat him and prove that nobody has his number. He can beat anybody who can beat him. He can beat just as well on any given night, especially now that he's at his best. And I'm okay with that. I don't think there needs to be more than that for this match.
I think that there's something compelling there. And I think that Lethal is a really good, is really good at selling a storyline that is as simple as I am trying to prove to myself and to everyone around me that I am just as good as I've always said and that is said about me. And the way I'm doing this is to, you know, right all the wrongs on my record to show, to prove to myself that, you know, these were flukes, that I actually am the best. I'm going to beat these guys and move on. And I make my actual climb back to a, you know, title shot and to holding on to that title. It won't work for every wrestler. That kind of simplistic storytelling, obviously something with like gravitas and nuance, like a generational conflict, did not work for Bully Ray because maybe he isn't the type of performer who can actually bring out the most in that storyline. Whereas Lethal is given a very, like, it is taking a rather thin idea and turning it into something that could potentially be fairly meaningful in the ring and outside of it. And, you know, he's going to get great matches because of it. I fully enjoyed the match that he had against Martinez on TV a couple weeks back. I believe that this match against Kushida is going to be great. You know, it sucks that there isn't a higher stakes for that match for Lethal in this pay-per-view, but what you are getting is a continuation of his story. You're getting it in ring and you're getting it against a competitor who is going to really shine against Lethal as well.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
So that's five matches. We've got two more. The last two basically just announced, and there's been nothing to further these two matches whatsoever. The Kingdom versus Los Ingobernables de Japón for the six-man titles. It's been announced, and that's it. There's been no... Matt Taven hasn't been able to cut a promo about LIJ. This wasn't even announced or acknowledged on television this week when Bushi Evil and Sonata were in the ring wrestling in the main event of television. So this feels very much like we need to have the six-man titles on the card. Who can they defend against? Sort of thing. And hey, we love having the New Japan guys over because they're real stars and are, you know, they're, anybody from New Japan is a big star. Whereas people from ROH, they're like, they're okay. That's how the booking comes across to me, at least when I watch these things.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, like, my bias, because I avidly follow New Japan Pro Wrestling, like, I am thrilled to see them. I am. I'm very excited to see them. It can be a momentary distraction because I am, like, delighted to see these guys share a ring in Ring of Honor, just as I'm always delighted to see, you know, Ring of Honor guys take any kind of space over in New Japan Pro Wrestling during their shows. But from a ongoing storyline perspective, it's not helping the ROH guys. It's not solving Bullet Club fatigue. It is, you know, it's an added draw, but it's not a long-term draw because it's, you know, it's momentary. It's meant for the show. It's meant for the, you know, the draw for the pay-per-view or the draw for the tour. It's not something that you're going to get to see on TV in and out every week. So it's something flashy to put into the window, but we don't get to keep it.
And then our seventh and final match announced so far is an eight-woman tag. Sumi Sakai, Tennille Dashwood, Jenny Rose, and Mayu Iwatani against Kelly Klein, Hazuki, Kagetsu, and Hana Kimura. So again, I mean, obviously there's been interaction between Kelly Klein and Sumi and Tennille. There was interaction between Sumi and Jenny Rose, but now that they're on the same team, I don't think that there's going to be any real conflict there. I think that story's done. This is just a showcase for the women, some of the Stardom women, some of the ROH women in a big eight-person tag. Nothing's on the line. Who wins doesn't really matter. The only way that this will really have any long-term consequences is depending on how the pinfall plays out. If somebody pins Sumi Sakai, then probably they'd get a title shot down the line.
Yeah. Any idea? I mean, any thoughts about that? Like, any idea if you think you see a Kelly Klein getting the pin on Sumi and then ensuring herself a title shot?
Sumi is unpinned so far this year, so I don't know if I do see that. Maybe Kelly gets the big pin on Tennille finally. It's hard to say. I'll have to think about it. Next week on this podcast, we'll give our official predictions, you and I both, and make our cases for why we think X and Y are
going to win.
So give me a week to mull over this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to guess that next week's episode is probably going to be a promo fest. I mean, just like it was like leading into Supercard, we're going to see a ton of promos for these matches. Some of them will be repeats. Some of them that have already been, you know, aired on previous episodes. And some of them will be, you know, brand new just to, you know, build up even further momentum for Best in the World. But yeah, that's, you know, it's possibly that the episode we had this week was just like a palate cleanser before we get the Best in the World blitz that'll be next, you know, this coming week's episode. So maybe we should be thankful for not being too inundated, I guess. I don't know.
So that's the seven matches that we have announced so far. Most of those matches were announced on social media, not actually on television, but that's the nature of ROH in 2018. Still a good chance that we'll get another one or two added. Lately on the Honor Club shows, I think at Supercard as well, they've done upwards of as many as nine matches on a show, so there's still room for another one or two. Maybe Kenny King and Austin Aries, maybe something. I mean, the top names not on the card so far: SoCal Uncensored, Silas Young, Shane Taylor. So there's a chance we see something with those. Would they be willing to do Punishment, Page, and Silas in a triple threat now? Or are they going to say he'll get his rematch against whoever wins in their one-on-one match? It's hard to say because I don't think any of it's going to be addressed on television next week regarding the television title.
Yeah, I think aside from promos for whatever matches are cemented, we'll probably, that it'll be online, if anything. But yeah, I don't know. There's some spots to fill. Hopefully it's not just, you know, a Bully Ray cheeseburger match.
No, he's facing Flip Gordon. It would be cheeseburger and Kurt Stallion against the Dogs. That would be your film. Cheeseburger and the return of Brutal Bob Evans. The reuniting of Brutal Burgers.
Oh.
Finally. Or Joey Dadiego. Whatever happened to that guy? Remember when he came back and we had a big debate about whether it was a one-off or whether he was back to bed? We're still left wondering.
Hey, that reminds me. We have a whole match that we didn't even mention.
Yeah, I mean, okay, Shane Taylor and Josh Woods. Josh the Goods Woods. Another guy who shows up once every month and a half to 2 months. This was a much belated PS to an Honor Club match they had in Florida in April, I want to say. So a couple months ago. At that event, Josh Woods was accompanied by his apparent friend, MMA fighter King Mo. Shane Taylor tried to bring a chair into the ring. Mo took the chair away. Josh Woods pinned Shane Taylor. After the match, Shane yelled at Mo. Mo wanted to fight him. Shane gave him the finger and walked away. A month and a half later, we finally get a return matchup between Shane and Josh. And Shane wins with a knockout punch. And we see clips of King Mo. And much like the question of Kenny King and Austin Aries, we're left wondering, are we actually going to get Shane Taylor and King Mo in an ROH ring? Or is this just some weird thing where they're showing us this for no reason?
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell. I'll say that this made Josh look really weak, especially the finish. He was knocked out with barely a punch, a strike. The way he sold it made it look like he had just gotten, drop kicked. It was weak ending, bad for Josh Woods. Nothing really more to say. Felt like a very odd coda to something that happened 2 months ago.
Yeah, and in my TV report, I said I don't like the knockout fist as a finisher. The Big Show did it for a while, and I didn't like it then either. If Shane Taylor can just punch you, knock you out cold to win the match, why does he bother doing
it? Why would he do anything else?
Why does he try to go for the splash and the leg drop and all those things when a lot of times he misses those? He should just, bell rings, tries to punch him, Woods ducks, tries to punch him again, and that's just it the whole match. So I have many issues with this idea, with this thing. Maybe if they announced that it was a closed right hand and that's technically illegal in pro wrestling, then I'd be okay with it. Because then he can only hit it as a finisher if the referee's not looking, if there's extenuating circumstances. And that explains why he doesn't just hit it immediately right off the bat every match.
Ah, okay. Yeah. That would be handy, but that's just not the way it was sold. Just not the way. I mean, it's clearly a punch. It's a strike. It's knocks him out really effectively.
Future ROH enforcer Shane Helms, if you're listening, ban the knockout punch. It'll be good for
I really hope this comes through for you. I feel like you believe in this story, the potential of the storyline so much. I really want it to happen for you.
It's so not happening. Shane Helms is going to, we'll see Shane again next time in 2 months, and he'll be losing to Silas Young in a four-man match, and that'll be it.
No, I believe in your story here. I think that you came up with something really great. I want to see it happen.
All right, well, who knows? I don't even know what's happening on next week's television, so we can't predict anything anymore. They used to be really consistent about in the main event, during the main event, Ian and Colt would say next week on TV, blah, 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 blah. They'd even show the graphics at the end of the show saying next week on TV, Coast to Coast versus Bruiser and Malonis. And it's now 2 weeks in a row that they haven't done that. And I'm fearful that it might be like a new thing. I really hope it's not.
Do you think that they might be not doing that to raise excitement, to raise anticipation, to make people tune in to see what is there? Do you think that there's a purpose for leaving that out?
Do you think it was advantageous to them to not advertise Bullet Club versus LIJ in advance?
I mean, no, not when you put it like that.
Yeah. That's, you want people to tune almost any other television show. You watch a popular, not sitcoms and stuff like that, but you watch a popular drama show, whether it's Game of Thrones or Lost or The Walking Dead or whatever, there's cliffhangers, right? They leave you going, wow, I gotta tune in next week to see what happens, to see how they solve this or how they get out of this. And ROH certainly does not do that. There's no cliffhanger this week. Bullet Club pinned Bushi and everything's great. The end.
Yep.
Yes, indeed. So I don't know. Now we're doing the same thing because we're wrapping up this show. We're gonna say again. You can send your emails to talkinghonor@gmail.com and we'll read them on the show and we'll try to answer your questions or give you our opinions and thoughts on things. As if we don't already give you more than enough of our opinions and thoughts.
Yes. Tell us, are you suffering from Bullet Club fatigue? What are your symptoms? We can diagnose you.
Yes, we can write you a prescription for one man, one woman, ring the bell. Something I don't know. Here's where we put in our big cliffhanger. Tune in next week and we'll give our predictions the best in the world. We'll say which titles we think are going to change hands. We'll say what woman is pinning what woman in that big 8-woman tag. We'll give an over-under on the number of low blows. And I'll reveal my long-lost illegitimate son. That's a WWE cliffhanger right there. That's straight out of the
anime. That is, yeah. Next, you'll be, you know, picking up other podcasters' wives and, you know, like, your illegitimate son is going to, like, you know, challenge for the rights to host this podcast. And
I guess the 2018 equivalent would be we need something more clickbaity. We need to be like, are Chuck Taylor and Shane Taylor related? Tune in next week to find out.
Ooh.
Things like that. I don't know. We're just going to end it here. We'll put you out of your misery.
No misery.
Tune in next week for more or less.
Bye. PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership, and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.